Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. So is there a better story to be told than the current one on the UK's vaccination plan? Today's Times reports Whitehall sources predicting all over 50s could be vaccinated by the end of March. This comes after figures accidentally published by the Scottish Government this week suggested the UK would have capacity for 3.8 million jabs next week and 5.4 million a week by the end of February. James, what's going on here? Is it the case that we actually have some very good news on vaccines? And even though the government has been saying that we're on track, that it's even better?
The document put up and then withdrawn by the Scottish government suggests that next week the UK should be vaccinating almost as many people as it has vaccinated so far in the whole programme. It suggests a very dramatic ramping up. And I think it does suggest that maybe the situation on vaccines is better than the government wishes to say. There's been a lot of talk about how many doses there are in the country that suggests a rather large number of doses are in the country. I think the government's concern is that, if you read this very good story in the Scottish edition of the Daily Telegraph today, how Boris Johnson's private secretary rang Nicola Sturgeon's private secretary to basically say, can you get this document down? And I think the government's concern is that it doesn't help the UK's negotiations with the pharmaceutical companies who are making these vaccines to reveal how much the UK has, because other countries will then start saying, well, hang on a second, we want some of that. And so I think that is the tension. But I think the interesting question is whether this ramp up in the vaccine programme can happen. I mean, we've all got very used to the government saying that some dramatically good thing is going to change the game and then it not being quite as good as first advertised. So that, I think we will now, everyone will be watching like hawks next week to see whether the vaccination programme can keep up with the schedule suggested in that Scottish Government document.
Fraser, if the vaccination programme does proceed as ministers hope, do you think there is a risk that we could be cut off? We could be told, look, you guys are doing very well. You do not have the need, you know, on humanitarian grounds, which some other countries do to get vaccines. You have to wait.
Yes, that's a risk not just for Britain, but for any country that manages to vaccinate the people who are likely to die, that is the over 60s, because at that point, say if you're a Belgian manufacturer, you can say, OK, Britain, you've now eliminated your threat of mortality from COVID, or virtually eliminated it. From now on, you're just vaccinating to stop people getting sick, but other countries have a greater need than you. France is behind in its vaccination schedule. So is Germany. They've both got orders with this Pfizer jab here in the same Belgian plant. So we're going to ship it to France and not to the UK. Now, this might sound far-fetched, but I understand these conversations are already happening. There's a kind of global race on for a relatively short supply of vaccines. And even the Oxford vaccine, strange, politicians will tell you that because of a deal that we did with Oxford and AstraZeneca, or the deal the government brokered, that means the British government can be guaranteed to get every shot coming out of the factory in Wrexham. But I'm hearing conflicting reports on that this might not be quite so assured, and that if we start to be getting to the stage where we're vaccinating people between the age of 50 and 60, and that's what there's a story in the Times today saying we're going to be doing that by the end of March, then that is where we might be facing stiffer global competition. After all, AstraZeneca is a global company with global obligations and global clients. So certainly from the offset, this has been one of the reasons for secrecy. Now, we're used to, Katie, having what Matt Hancock described as a big, hairy target. So he'll say that we're going to test, say, 100,000 people a day. He had to ramp it up. And the government was almost embarrassed into action because it had set itself this audacious goal. We're used to the government aiming high and then not hitting it. Every time Boris Johnson has said something, we're going to be done by November, done by Christmas, then it has tended not to happen. So we're used to expecting whatever the government says it's going to do. We're expecting government to do less than that because that's been the pattern. But on this from the offset the government has understated for two reasons. One, you don't want to repeat the cycle of disappointment where people think they're going to be ready by vaccinated by April and in fact aren't. But the other thing is showing your hand in this global vaccine game.
James, in a way, if we get to that point and you look at those predictions about getting to the over 50s, is that a nice problem for the government to have? It's clearly going to be a sign of success.
Yes, and I think it is clearly the government would rather that than the alternative. I think, as you wrote about yesterday, Katie, what it will do is it will intensify the debate on the Tory benches about when to ease restrictions. Although I think Fraser makes a very interesting point in his Telegraph column today, pointing to how Benjamin Netanyahu and Israel are saying to the country, look, we're tightening restrictions right now to aid the vaccination programme, because the vaccination programme is the route to freedom. So slightly tighter restrictions to help that out is worth it. And I think it'll be an interesting political choice for Boris Johnson. You know, does he say, look, I'm keeping restrictions tight because even after mid-Feb and these 13.5 most vulnerable people have been vaccinated, given their first shot. Does he say, look, all I'm going to do now is reopen schools because the biggest threat to the successful rollout of the vaccination programme is another crisis that puts hospitals under pressure again and makes it harder to get up to the kind of 3 million plus a week that would enable you to have done all the over 50s by the end of March, which, if you can do that, then I think you are looking at possibly all restrictions going sometime in April.
Fraser, when it comes to that debate on when restrictions ought to go, what's your sense of, I suppose, the mood within the, A, in government, but two, within the parliamentary party? Because ministers are very tight-lipped. You had Matt Hancock tell yourself that he believed we were going to have a great summer. But beyond that, we haven't got much in the way of when exactly restrictions could go. Boris Johnson talked about mid-February as a review, but if anything, I think that promise concerned quite a lot of his colleagues because they just don't think the mid-February is when things are going to change at all.
Well, yes, of course, in mid-February, we might have hit the target in terms of people vaccinated, but we won't be seeing the results. The results will have come, will follow. That's why all eyes are on Israel right now. Israel's now vaccinated a quarter of its population. And only this morning, we've heard some of the results. Amongst those vaccinated, even after 14 days, infection levels are one-third below those who hadn't been vaccinated. Now, this is, it's funny, just, of course, in a way, this is exactly as you'd expect. This is what the manufacturers told us. But I took this to be hugely heartening news, because right now it's still a theory. We think that the vaccine program will cut deaths by 80% in Britain by the end of March. But that's if all goes according to plan, if the vaccines behave in the way that they're expected to. And the figures, the efficacy figures from the vaccines are from trials. But in Israel, you've got a massive real-world experiment going on. And right now, it really does seem to be going according to plan. Now, if Israel manages to pull this off, it thinks it can eliminate the vast majority of COVID deaths by March. And Netanyahu was saying to his cabinet a few days ago that the great goal awaiting us is to be the first country in the world to emerge fully from a national coronavirus crisis. And he's right, but it's also the case that Britain could be the second country. And that if the Israeli project goes well, it will have beaten the path that the world will want to follow out of this crisis. But in Britain, you'll want to see the results. You'll want to see the hospitalisation figures going down. The deaths will be the sharpest decrease because we'll have vaccinated 20% of the population, account for 90% of COVID deaths. So you can cover them quite quickly. But it won't be really until the middle of March that we will start to see a serious vaccine dividend. And then we can have a difficult conversation about whether it's time to unlock immediately, what the purpose of lockdown is. Is it to stop death or is it to stop people getting infected? Because COVID still gives you pretty, it can not lay you out in bed for 10 days, that's not nice, but it can also give you, there's also talk about long COVID, people having debilitating symptoms after 3 or 4 months. So will Matt Hancock be prepared to say that he's willing to let the virus rip, to use some of his own language, amongst the young, just because he's vaccinated the old and eliminated or greatly reduced the mortality risk? So that is going to be the dilemma, and that will be facing the government in March. So the conversation about lockdown, I think, is about to change radically when we see the Israeli figures fall and the British figures follow.
James, what do you think the answer to that dilemma is?
So I think there are going to be a distinct series of political positions on this question. I think there is going to be the COVID recovery group Tory MP position, which will essentially be 2 to 3 weeks after that 13.5 million most vulnerable people have had their first shot. That's when restrictions should go. I don't think the government is going to go for that. The second place, which is some roughly where I think the government will probably end up, is once everyone in phase one, so that's 28 million people, and that might now be by the end of March, have had their first shot, 2 to 3 weeks after that, that's the moment when restrictions go. Then there's a position that Jonathan Ashworth, the Labour shadow health spokesman, seemed to be moving Labour to, which is, look, we don't know enough about long COVID, but we know it's unpleasant and nasty and debilitating. So we can't let the restrictions go until essentially we've vaccinated the whole population. You can't let it rip among the young. I mean, those are going to be the three distinct political positions. And I think that is where the argument is going to be. I suspect that the government will end up around that middle position, which would suggest a kind of a big easing up and opening up in mid to late April.
And Fraser, just on that, finally, looking at that third position, which is perhaps what Labour might lean towards, but we don't know for sure what their formal position is going to be, that you need restrictions until all the population is vaccinated because you can't lever it for young people because some could get long COVID, even if there's a very, very low death rate. How do you think that would work in practice? Because a lot of the messaging in terms of young people is, you might not be harmed by this, but you've got to be careful because you've got to protect your elderly relatives. Adherence is already in a tricky place. Sure, it's going to get quite hard if you took that approach to get young people to adhere to that when at that point it's only really yourself at risk, or you might think of like that.
The government's quite good at changing messages. They've changed from, you know, hands, face, space, protect the NHS. They change the whole time. And I was struck, Katie, by something you wrote in Coffee House a couple of days ago, but they're planning a message along the lines of coffee can kill or something. What was it?
Yes, yeah, so one of the things, we're in enforcement week still, guys. It's the final day of the government's enforcement week. Instead of changing the rules, they're talking about tougher messaging and they're drafting up new adverts. And one of the ones that I know they were considering, let's see if they actually do put it out, it's already got a bit of a backlash, went along the lines of grabbing a coffee can kill. And we've seen a bit on takeaway coffees already in terms of how the government has suggested that if you have a coffee with you, it could be a picnic. They rode back a bit on that, but, you know, some people are getting in trouble for that. So an extension.
Yeah, and you get into pretty difficult territory there, because if you start to put cigarette-style health warnings on coffee cups, then people aren't going to take it seriously. But it will be controversial, there's no doubt about it. Only in the last year have we had the notion introduced to us that the government ought to shut down society to stop a virus circulating. This is a new tool in government's kits. We're not sure if this rule applies to a lethal virus, but not to a debilitating virus. And if the Labour Party is going to take the position that the government should keep locking down while the virus is still in circulation, and that's what Jonathan Ashworth said when he stood up in the Commons, then that would be for lasting for quite some time yet, throughout the summer. But interestingly, Governor Cuomo in New York has changed his tune now. He used to be the most pro-lockdown governor in America, pretty much. But now he's switched. He's saying, I want to unlock now, because if we wait any longer, there won't be anything left to unlock. So it seems that he thinks, he's looking ahead to an era where the virus has protected people, and the political debate switches from concern about people dying from COVID to concern about the economic destitution, the loss of jobs, the harm to education, and then the politicians will be trying to come up with a different message. And you can see a bit of that in Matt Hancock's interview with James and I a couple of weeks ago. I was struck by how, you know, somebody who had been quite closely associated with lockdown was using phrases like cry freedom. That was his words. So it seems to me as if he is now preparing to go from Mr. Strict Lockdown to Mr. Quick Reopening. And that's not a contradiction, because as Netanyahu told his cabinet, we're cracking down now so we can be the first to reopen. So he wants to present himself both as the lockdown prime minister and the reopen prime minister ahead of his election on March the 23rd. I think we can expect to see more political pivoting as people get more prepared for the post-vaccine environment where COVID has lost its deadly sting and a very new conversation can take place.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, James. And thank you for listening. And to Max Jeffrey for producing this podcast.